Chapter 11, The Raising of Lazarus, Final Plot Against Jesus, Jesus Retreats to Ephraim. Verse 1, Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. The story begins by introducing Lazarus. Lazarus, in Hebrew, Eleazar, which means God will help. He resided in Bethany, or Betania in Hebrew, which means something like the house or place of the poor. There were at least two Bethanies mentioned in the New Testament. Bethany beyond the Jordan, where Jesus and his disciples were stationed at this time, and Bethany near Jerusalem, where Jesus would resurrect his dear friend Lazarus. Both places were special. It is likely that these villages served as Jewish diaconal centers for the nationwide Essene network of diaconal poorhouses. Essenes were known for their commitment to serve the poor and sick. They established diaconal networks of poorhouses. We read one description of such network by Josephus Flavius, a Jewish historian writing under Roman patronage. The Essenes are despisers of riches, and so very communal as to earn our admiration. There is no one to be found among them who has more than another, for they have a law that those who come to join them must let whatever they have be common to the whole order, so that among them all there is no appearance of either poverty or excessive wealth. Everyone's possessions are intermingled. They have no one city, but in every city dwell many of them, and if any of the sect arrive from elsewhere, all is made available to them as if it were their own, and they go to those they have never seen before as if they were long acquaintances. Thus they carry nothing at all with them in their journeys, except weapons for the defense against thieves. Accordingly, in every city, there is one appointed specifically to take care of strangers and to provide them with garments and other necessities. It is striking how fitting are the words of Jesus to his disciples when he commands them to go two by two to preach the good news of the kingdom. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions. You received without payment, give without payment. Take no gold, no silver, or copper in your belts, no bag for your journey, or two tunics, or sandals, or staff, for laborers deserve their food. In addition, we read in the book of Acts, all who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. Acts chapter 2. This is not the first time we hear of Jesus freely using the network of Essene travel. As a matter of fact, the best example is found in Luke 22. This is the passage where Jesus told some of his disciples to go ahead of the other disciples to set up everything for the Passover celebration. The disciples asked, "Where do you want us to prepare it?" Jesus responded, "As you enter the city, a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him to the house that he enters and say to the owner of the house, 'The teacher asks, where is the guest room and where may I eat the Passover with my disciples?' He will show you a large room upstairs, all furnished. Make preparations there." This particular passage should not be read as a display of Jesus' omniscience or knowing everything, but rather of his familiarity with a Essene diaconal network for travelers and his ability to use it. Since many Essenes did not marry, the men would do tasks otherwise left exclusively for women, such as carrying water jars. Therefore, Jesus' instructions had to do with telling his disciples to look for the Essene poorhouse in town by looking for a man carrying a jar of water and then following him. Verse 2. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. It is interesting and somewhat surprising that John makes this comment so early, because the incident of Mary anointing Jesus is not recorded until the next chapter. This means that either John wrote his gospel after the other gospels, expecting people to be familiar with the story, or more likely that the story had already circulated orally, and John assumed the hearers were familiar with it. Verse 3. So the sisters sent to him, saying, Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. This is a striking statement, because by the time Jesus got the message, Lazarus had already died. Jesus arrived in Bethany, near Jerusalem, from Bethany beyond the Jordan, sometime on the fourth day after Lazarus' passing. When he got the message, he remained where he was for two more days. It takes about a day to get from one place to another, so this meant, while the messenger was on the way to Jesus, Lazarus died. We will soon find out why Jesus stayed where he was for two more days. Additionally, there are remarkable parallels between the rising of Lazarus and the healing of the man who was blind from birth. In the case of the healing of the blind man, light was given. In the case of Lazarus, life was given. Both themes are stated explicitly in the prologue in John 1:4 that sets the trajectory for the entire gospel. In him was life, and the life was the light of man. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Not only that, but the reason for both the death of Lazarus and the man's blindness was for the glory of God. Verse 5. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, Let us go to Judea again. When we read verses 5 and 6, they make little sense. If Jesus loved them, why didn't he come immediately? However, if we read the text carefully, we will quickly realize that the verse 5 is a parenthetical comment inserted between verses 4 and 6. This means that verse 6, so when he heard, is a continuation of verse 4. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. So that no one would think that Jesus did not truly love the family, the parenthetical comment was added. Now, you must know, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Verse 8. The disciples said to him, Rabbi, the Judaioi were just now seeking to stone you. Are you going there again? Jesus answered, Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble, but he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles, because the light is not in him. If we attempt to understand the Judaioi in this passage as being the Jewish people, the sentence would sound completely ridiculous. Clearly, the Jerusalemite authorities who were seeking this rabbi's life are in view here. Verse 11. After saying these things, he said to them, Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awaken him. The disciples said to him, Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will recover. Now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought he meant taking rest in sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus has died, and for your sake I am glad that I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him. So Thomas, called Twin, said to his fellow disciples, Let us all go, that we may die with him. Jesus first tells his disciples that Lazarus has fallen into a coma, stating that he would go to release him from it. The disciples, knowing about the dangers Jesus and they themselves would face by being near Jerusalem, objected to going. Jesus then clarified that he perceived more than what the messenger had delivered in the message from Mary and Martha. He knew that while the messenger was in transit, Lazarus had already died. Thomas's response confirmed the fear of all the disciples. Let us all go, that we may die with him. Verse 17. When Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in tomb 4 days. There is a tradition in Judaism that still exists today, that the soul after death does not immediately depart the deceased, but hovers over the body for a period of 3 days, during which time resurrection is possible. Jesus arrived in Bethany near Jerusalem on the fourth day. This explains why, after hearing the news that Lazarus was very ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Jesus knew how long it would take to travel to Bethany, and he was determined to arrive not only after Lazarus' death, but when, according to popular Jewish belief, resurrection was no longer possible on the fourth day. When Jesus was a child and later as a teenager, he no doubt spent a good amount of time in the city of Tzipori, Sepphoris, which was only a brisk 30 minutes walk from the small village of Nazareth where he lived. Sepphoris had a Greek theater, and Jesus may have spent time watching plays and rehearsals there. The Gospels use the theater vocabulary, for example, when talking about Jesus exposing the evils of hypocrisy. Hypocrites, literally in Greek, are actors on the theatrical stage. But there is one more thing he would have learned from often observing actors on the stage, and this was the art of timing. Theater without timing is not theater. Of course, this may not be the only place where Jesus may have acquired the art of timing things right, but may very well be that what he learned in Tzipori, he later used in this chapter in his ministry to show God's glory in the most powerful and dramatic way, resurrecting someone on the day when the resurrection was no longer possible. Verse 18. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Iudaioi had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. Lazarus was highly respected by the Iudaioi. Remember that Iudaioi did not equal Pharisees. In fact, after Jesus raised Lazarus, since the Pharisees were known for believing in physical resurrection from the dead, some of the Iudaioi would go to the Pharisees, verse 46, to report what had happened. Jesus' closeness with this family and this family's closeness to the Iudaioi supports my suggestion that Jesus' own subgroup of Israel was, in fact, Iudaioi. Many of the Iudaioi, hoping to bring much-needed comfort, came to mourn together with Martha and Mary. It is in this story that Jesus makes his final strike against the stronghold of unbelief within Jerusalemite priestly elite. He is about to resurrect a respected member of the Jerusalemite religious society in plain view of members of the Iudaioi system. Verse 20. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." Martha knew by the time Jesus received the message, her brother Lazarus was already dead. And yet, since she knew exactly where to send the message, she would have also known how long it would take to get from one Bethany to another. The math did not work. Jesus was 2 days late. Perhaps she thought, as the procession towards the place of burial was going on, Jesus would arrive and resurrect her brother. But Jesus did not come. For 3 more days, Martha held out hope that Jesus would come and bring her brother back to life, but still he did not come. Verse 23, Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Martha was careful, seeking not to raise her own hopes too high. She probably thought to herself, "Jesus seems to be saying that my brother will be resurrected, but he could be referring to some time in the distant future. I so hope that I was wrong about this one." Verse 25, Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, Son of God, who is coming into the world." It is as if Jesus had said to Martha, "Martha, do not be afraid to trust your own heart and mind. Believe in me. What you, Martha, must understand about me is that the resurrection is not something I do. I am the resurrection and the life. Lazarus was among the Iudaioi who believed in me all along, and so are you. Everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. It is important to see that this grand statement Jesus made was fully acceptable to Martha. Her confession of Jesus' identity in the face of personal trial and tragedy is a staggering expression of faith, echoing the words of faith of the Samaritan woman. A North American Christian musician, he may be the only one, who placed a significant mark on my own development is Michael Card. One of his songs, and most of them are really worthwhile, is called God's Own Fool. I think the words should be quoted here because in many ways they sum up the story of this gospel, its rejection and its reception. Since I've imagined him all of my life as the wisest of all of mankind, but if God's holy wisdom is foolish to man, he must have seemed out of his mind. Even his family said he was mad, and the priest said a demon's to blame. But God, in the form of this angry young man, could not have seemed perfectly sane. We, in our foolishness, thought we were wise. He played the fool and he opened our eyes. We, in our weakness, believed we were strong. He became helpless to show we were wrong. So we follow God's own fool, for only the foolish can tell. Believe the unbelievable. Come, be a fool as well. So come, lose your life for a carpenter's son, for a madman who died for a dream, and you'll have the faith his first followers had, and you'll feel the weight of the beam. So surrender the hunger to say you must know. Find the courage to say, I believe. For the power of paradox opens your eyes and blinds those who say they can see. Verse 28, when she said this, she went and called her sister Mary, saying in private, the teacher is here and is calling for you. And when she heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the village. He was still in the place where Martha had met him. For Jesus not to come on time must have been deeply troubling. If one could use a phrase from a famous Christian hymn and turn it into a deeply angry and sarcastic statement, it would be, what a friend we have in Jesus. Where was he? Why was he so late? We must not move too quickly here, though. We need to experience the pain of Lazarus's death and the deep disappointment of Jesus' seeming betrayal when Martha whispered in Mary's ear that Jesus had finally arrived. No doubt Mary, who once sat at Jesus' feet when he taught Torah in Bethany, had mixed feelings. She overcame the tension and went out of the village to meet him. It is obvious that he could not enter Bethany because of the Iudaioi. Verse 30 is another parenthetical comment by which the author is clarifying the meaning of the story as it unfolds. Verse 31. When the Iudaioi, who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. What is important here is that the author highlights the fact that when Jesus spoke with Mary outside of the village, some of the Iudaioi who had come to comfort the family followed her. No doubt, it was women and not men who went out after Mary and followed her to the place where, to their surprise, she was conversing with a man. They did not mean to eavesdrop on this conversation, but they did. They simply thought Mary was overcome with grief and they wanted to make sure she would be all right. Notice here a very important sense of the Iudaioi as those who were able to sympathize and care deeply for the closest friends of Jesus, the family of Lazarus. Verse 32. Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Iudaioi who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. Here we see Jesus' connection with the Iudaioi as never before in this gospel. Once again, a point of connection with John 1:11. Please allow me to explain. When Jesus saw Mary and members of the Iudaioi grieving passionately over the passing of Lazarus, he was deeply troubled. Notice that it is not simply that when he saw Mary weeping that he was overcome with grief. It was when he saw also the Iudaioi weeping and grieving with her. How burials occur within a particular culture tell us much about the people's worldview. In Jewish culture, while the resurrection of the righteous is also affirmed, there is a strong belief that when a righteous man dies, the world suffers loss. The balance of righteousness versus evil tips in the wrong direction. Grief and the sense of loss are very real. There is no pretense here. Things are bad, death is bad. Verse 34. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." A brief historical excursion into Jewish burial practices of the first century will be very helpful here. Most Jews in the first century in the land of Israel buried people twice. When someone died, the body was first wrapped in a cloth and placed in a cave for a prolonged period of time. After the body decayed and only bones remained, they were collected and placed in a special box called an ossuary. If you search online, you can see hundreds of ossuaries from Israel Museum, among other places. The ossuary was then placed into a family tomb, together with other ossuaries already stationed there. Jesus, knowing that the first burial had already taken place, asked where they had laid the body. They responded, "Lord, come and see." The word "Lord" used here in Greek is not a confession of faith that Jesus is the incarnate God, but simply a respectful term of address. "Sir." Jesus' passion and love for the Iudaioi, his own people group, and its particular expression, the family of Lazarus, moved him to overcome his fear and the fear of the disciples who were with him. It was time to enter the place that belonged to the Iudaioi who opposed him and sought his life. Verse 35, Jesus wept. So the Iudaioi said, "See how he loved him." No other section of the scriptures shows Jesus so deeply full of emotion. His full divinity and full humanity meet here in the expression of his grief. He did not just cry, he wept. His reaction, even though he knew he was about to resurrect Lazarus, was fully compatible with the Jewish practice of grieving and wailing. The Iudaioi who witnessed this exchange concluded that Jesus indeed loved the same person they themselves appreciated so much for his service to the community of the poor and the suffering. Notice again the positive description of the Iudaioi here. Verse 37. But some of them said, "Could he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying?" One can see the crisis of the Iudaioi's opposition to Jesus was deepening. Now it was not only those from ideologically Jewish Galilee and a few members of the Jerusalemite ruling system who began to take interest in Jesus. Many who had come to comfort the family of Lazarus were moving toward a positive view of Jesus. Their regret was, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying?"
They were not talking about resurrection. Their reasoning is therefore very logical. If Jesus could give sight to the man born blind who had never seen light, surely he could have given healing to a man who was sick. One action was much greater than the other. Verse 38. Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, by this time there will be an odor, for he had been here dead for 4 days." No one was really prepared for what was about to take place. Verse 40. Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me." Earlier, Jesus had told Martha that arriving on the fourth day would not limit him. Resurrection was not something he would do with his Father's help. Resurrection and the life are both the essence of who Jesus is. He is indeed the life-giving Logos, Memra, of Israel's God himself, and he was determined to show the Iudaioi his Father's glory. Verse 43. When he said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" Though most tombs were not very deep, some were and included a tunnel with stairs that went down into a cave where bodies were deposited. So it is possible that we are dealing here with just this kind of tomb. It is not surprising that when the stone that functioned as a door was taken away, Jesus called Lazarus in a very loud voice. Jesus was not a modern television preacher. This was not done to make this event more dramatic or theatrical. It was so that Lazarus, already raised by God, could physically hear the voice of Jesus from afar in the dark and find his way to the door, entering again into the land of the living. If one thinks further about this, one could ask, why could Jesus not go inside the cave and resurrect Lazarus, helping him to get up? My answer may surprise you, but hang in there. I think it will make some sense in the end. By the way, it may be an alternative reason why Jesus raised his voice, if the tomb in fact had no tunnel to go down. Jesus was not a Christian, but a real, walking and breathing Torah-observant Israelite and a Jew. This means that the purity requirements of the Torah about not touching the dead were very important to him, even though they sound utterly unimportant to most of us today. There were warnings for the Israelites not to touch a dead body. You might ask, what warnings? There are a number of warnings, but this is the key one. Whoever touches a human corpse will be unclean for 7 days. Numbers 19. The body of Lazarus was almost certainly not the only dead body in the cave going through its first burial. Remember that Bethany was a center for care of sick and poor people. No doubt many of them came there to die. It would have been very easy to touch a corpse in the dark. It may be difficult for us to reimagine Jesus as someone who was thoroughly and not only peripherally Jewish. The Torah and all of the Torah was utterly important to him. It is possible that this is why he called out in a very loud voice, "Lazarus, come forth." Verse 44. The man who had died came out, his hands and feet bound with linen strips, and his face wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." The author of this gospel was an eyewitness who oftentimes points out small details. He mentioned something that no other gospel does. Lazarus, when he came out of the tomb, was not covered with one piece of clothes, but with two. His face had a cloth. that was separate from the body shroud. Today, many ancient Jewish tombs have been discovered, and this description has been confirmed. Many Jews were indeed burying the way John described, with a separate cloth for the face. The author was local. He was an eyewitness. He told us what he knew to be true. Verse 45. Therefore, many of the Judaioi who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. Then the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting of Sanhedrin. What are we accomplishing? They asked. Here's the man performing many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and then the Romans will come and take away both our temple and our nation. Then one of them, named Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, spoke up. You know nothing at all. You do not realize that it is better for you that one man die for the people than the whole nation perish. The text at hand is very interesting because it shows a distinction existed between Pharisees and the Judaioi. Some Judaioi who placed their faith in Jesus went to the Pharisees upon witnessing the resurrection. That made a lot of sense because among various theological movements, among the Judeans, the Judaioi, it was the Pharisees who championed the idea of the resurrection from the dead. Yet most of them, at least at the top level, were not accepting Jesus' claims. How can this be? Now that Lazarus is alive again, the Judaioi who believed had a point to raise. Verse 51. He did not say this on his own, but as a high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the nation, and not only for that nation, but also for the scattered children of God, to bring them together and make them one. So from that day on, they plotted to take his life. What is intriguing here is that it is the Gospel of John in particular that has the most intense polemic against the priestly leaders at the Jerusalem temple, yet it is this same gospel that gives the office of the high priest in Jerusalem the highest respect. Even the chief of the evil shepherds of Israel, when he speaks as a high priest, is able to bring forth a true prophecy from God. So that high priest uttered the words that echoed the statement of Jesus made in John 10, that he has sheep of another fold that he must bring in. Unlike the traditional interpretation, I think the sheep of another fold in the context of John's gospel are in fact all Israelites who are non-Judeans, especially Samaritan Israelites. Here too, I think high priest prophetically summarizes the mission of God in Jesus as described in this gospel. He would die for the nation, and not only for that nation, but also for the scattered children of God, to bring them together and make them one. The language here parallels Ezekielian prophetic tradition where the God of Israel promised to regather northern Israel and make it one with the kingdom of Judah under the new leadership of his anointed king. Verse 54. Therefore, Jesus no longer moved about publicly among the Judaioi. Instead, he withdrew to a region near the wilderness, to a village called Ephraim, where he stayed with his disciples. It is even more interesting that the following verse states that Jesus, realizing the danger to his life and his disciples' lives, by remaining near Jerusalem, relocated them to the village called Ephraim. Ephraim in Ezekiel is one of the symbols of the northern kingdom that I think is in view when it comes to the restoration of Israel as part of God's mission in Jesus. Today's Christian village in the Palestinian West Bank, called in Arabic Tebe, was the very place the gospel is referring to here. It is situated in the territory of the tribe of Benjamin and was once called Ephraim. What is intriguing is that it is located almost on the border of Samaria and Judea.
This is the place where Jesus chose to hide and regroup before his final trial in Jerusalem, which was soon to unfold. Verse 55. When it was almost time for the Passover of the Judaoi, many went up from the country to Jerusalem for their ceremonial cleansing before the Passover. They kept looking for Jesus, and as they stood in the temple courts, they asked one another, "What do you think? Isn't he coming to festival at all?" But the chief priests and the Pharisees had given orders that anyone who found out where Jesus was should report so that they might arrest him. The people who went up to Jerusalem from a variety of Jewish settlements in the region were very interested in Jesus and hoped to meet him while they were in Jerusalem. Would he now claim his messianic title? Would he come at all? They did not know. The authorities had already decreed that Jesus was to be arrested and killed.